Open up your Bibles, if you would, to Job chapter 1. Job's in the Old Testament. It's right before the book of Psalms. So Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, Deuteronomy. You'll keep going. Joshua, Judges, Ruth. 1 and 2 Samuel, 1 and 2 Kings, 1 and 2 Chronicles. Keep going. Ezra, Nehemiah, Esther, Job. And so Job chapter 1, a lot of people, a lot of theologians think that it was actually the first book of the Bible written. So Moses wrote the account of creation and other things, the first five books of the Bible. And so he wrote those. But before he wrote those, then Job the account of this was written. And maybe that Job lived around the time of Abraham, possibly. But his life is just, it's interesting. So we're going to pick up with Job chapter 1, verse 1. And this is called The Beauty of Suffering. So Job chapter 1, verse 1 says this: "There once was a man named Job who lived in the land of Uz. He was blameless." Everybody say blameless. "A man of complete integrity." Say integrity. "He feared God and stayed away from evil." I mean, you talk about a guy who was blameless. He was full of integrity. He feared God. In other words, he had this reverence for God. And he stayed away from evil. And it says this about him: that he had 7 sons and 3 daughters. So, you know, he had a huge family. He was blessed. He owned 7,000 sheep, 3,000 camels, 500 teams of oxen, and 500 female donkeys. He also had many servants. He was, in fact, the richest person in the entire area. Now, if we'd lived back at that time, during this moment, many of us could have probably looked at Job's life and thought, man, I'd like to have his life right now. I'd like to be experiencing the things that he's experiencing. I'd like for those things to be my life. I'd like to have, you know, all that livestock. I'd like to be living a life where people would look at me and say I'm blameless and I'm full of integrity and all that kind of thing. And he goes on to say this. It says that Job's sons would take turns preparing feasts in their homes, and they would also invite their 3 sisters to celebrate with them. When these celebrations ended, sometimes after several days, Job would purify his children. He would get up early in the morning and offer a burnt offering for each of them. For Job said to himself, perhaps my children have sinned and have cursed God in their hearts. This was Job's regular practice. So he was not indifferent. First of all, he was a man of integrity, blameless. He lived, a life, I don't want to say he lived apart from sin, because of our flesh, all of us have been guilty of sin from one time or another. But it wasn't a practice in his life. But not only that, he wasn't indifferent to what took place in his family. Whenever they were doing things they weren't supposed to be doing, he'd offer up sacrifices for them and those kind of things. So he had this awareness of God. He wanted to be connected with him. He wanted him to be pleased by his life and all of those things. And so, again, we would look at his life and think that, man, I'd like to have his life. But here's one of the things, when I say the beauty of suffering, now let me just say this, even though I think there is some beauty in suffering, I don't think any of us enjoy it. I don't lay back on my bed and go, man, this hard place is so beautiful, God. Don't deliver me too quickly. I want to stay in this a little while longer. I don't think that, right? I don't think anybody else in here does. But here's one of the reasons, one of the things about suffering I think makes it beautiful, and that's this, is that all of us experience suffering. This book, when you go back and read it, if you've never heard of Job before and you begin to read, from this moment on, we begin to hear this story of this man that goes through this horrific suffering. He loses members of his family. He gets sick. He loses his wealth. I mean, everything that's precious to him, everything that he spent a lifetime accumulating, everything that he's known for, all of that, he loses all of it. And he goes through this hard place. And quite honestly, when we read the book of Job, there's elements in there and there's things, it can mess with our theology, and just so many things can be impacted by it. And so our theology, a lot of times when we're suffering, it stinks. And so there's just all of these things. But one of the things that we recognize, again, we could have looked at Job's life one day and thought, I'd love to be him. And the next few months and what took place in his life, you'd be like, I thank God I'm not him. Suffering is a great equalizer. I don't care who we are. I don't care what the circumstances in our life are right now. Maybe things are really, really good for you. And people ask me, I've said this to you before. People will say, hey, how are you doing? I say, well, life is all about seasons, and I'm in a good season in my life right now. Right now, I'm in a good season in my life. I've been through hard seasons before. You say, well, Pastor Rick, how long is that good season going to last? I don't know. I know I'm in a good season right now. And I say this, I said it to the men at the conference, and that is that every season has its pain, every season has its privilege, and every season has its purpose. And so sometimes we get so caught up in the pain of the season, we forget the privilege of it, and we forget the purpose of it. But all of them have that. And so here's Job, and as you read this encounter of the things that took place with him, that he loses all of these things. But one of the things it reveals to us, it doesn't matter where anyone's life is that none of us are exempt from hard places, from hard seasons, from hardship, from suffering. None of us are exempt from that. We're not exempt. Even in the early church, they counted it when they suffered for their faith. They counted it that they were worthy to be counted faithful, to suffer for his name. In Hebrews 11, the first half of the chapter, it goes through talking about all of these great things. It talks about Moses and how he was delivered. It talks about Abraham and the things that took place with him. It talks about Noah and Enoch and all of these great encounters and all this great deliverance. And then about halfway through the psalm, and hardly ever do we get to this point in our messages and our sermons, it says these two words to start out a verse: but others. Said some were sawn in half, they weren't delivered. Some were burned at the stake, they weren't delivered. It says that they endured that because of the promise of what was ahead for them. And so suffering is just one of those things that the thing that's not unique is the fact that we all go through it. The thing that sometimes is unique is what we experience and what takes place in our life and what God does in us. It's just kind of the great, it's the common denominator of humanity. We all suffer. Some of you right now may be going in a season that's incredibly difficult for you, incredibly hard for you. And so it's just part of being a human being on this side of eternity, that it's unique to this, being on this side of eternity for those of us that are believers. I've heard somebody say this, that if you're not a believer, this is like the only heaven you'll ever know. And if you are a believer, this is the only kind of hell you'll ever know. That on the other side of this, that there's another part of our story, and we'll look at that here in a few minutes. So number one is this, is that all of us experience suffering. So starts out with this, that he was blameless. He had all of these things. He had a fear of God. He stayed away from evil. He even was, you know, ministering to his kids and what was going on in their life. That was his regular practice, and that was when things were good. Well, then right after that, things began to go bad in his life, and so let's move to Job 42. It really is a book that you should sit down and just read, and just you'll get an idea of what he's going through in all of this. And understand this, when he's going through this, there are things that he says, and we'll look at this here in a minute, that really weren't, that he truly stated them, but they weren't statements of truth. Sometimes in our pain, we make statements that we think are right, only to kind of find out later, hey, I was wrong about that. But in Job 42, as this is coming to an end, he's still hurting, he still is without things, but then he begins to have this encounter with God. In 42 verse 1, it says, "Then Job replied to the Lord, 'I know that you can do anything, and no one can stop you. You asked, who is this that questions my wisdom from such ignorance?'" So that's God talking to Job. He said, "You're questioning my wisdom with such ignorance." And Job had friends in his life that came around, and they were probably trying to be a great help and that kind of thing, but they were saying even dumber things than him. And one of the things that happens sometimes in our pain is that we try to think of reasons or try to come up with answers, and a lot of times we're not right. I know that there have been times when I've been around people, and they've experienced tremendous loss in that moment. I remember one time in my life that this family was going through an incredible, just unexpected tragedy. And they were going to have to tell one of the kids about what had taken place with one of the parents. And so I remember they sit there, and as they began to share things with this kid, they meant well, and you know, they had good intentions, but some of the stuff they said, finally I had to tell them, like, just stop. It's okay to say, "I don't know." If you don't know, just say, "I don't know." And the Bible says to do this when people suffer. What does it say? When people are weeping, preach a great message and have a great reason as to why things are happening. Oh, no, that's not what it says. What do we do when people weep? We weep with them. Well, I shouldn't know what to say. Well, probably nothing. Tell them you love them. Weep with them. Weep when people weep. So Job right here, he says this, I know that you can do anything. No one can stop you. You ask, who is this that questions my wisdom in such ignorance? It is I, and I was talking about things I knew nothing about, things far too wonderful for me. You said, listen, and I will speak. I have some questions for you, and you must answer. Now listen to this. This is Job. Job said this, I had only heard about you before, but now I have seen you with my own eyes. Here's one of the things about suffering is that we experience the reality of God's presence. On this side of eternity, there are things that we experience about God that we would not experience outside of this. I wrote this down, just some biblical examples. In Genesis 17:1, when Abram was 99 years old, he'd been promised 24 years earlier that they were going to have a baby, and he's 99, and God is getting ready to change his name to Abraham, and in a year, they're going to have their baby. But when he was 99, God reveals himself as the El Shaddai. Now, I looked that up, and for some people, they say that that's a phrase that means that he's the God that's more than enough, and I think that's okay. One says that he's the great nourisher, or the breasty one, the one that supplies all that we need. Another translation says this, that he's an overpowerer, that he will overpower any of our circumstances. He's the almighty God. And so Abram, in his hardship of not having a son with his wife Sarah, God's revealing to him that I'm the God that can overpower even the impossible circumstances in your life. But he wouldn't have experienced that without that 24 years of hardship that took place. And actually, it was 25 before they had their baby. And so he experienced El Shaddai in that way. In Genesis 16:13, when Hagar, who was his wife, who was Abraham's wife's servant, was mistreated by Sarai, when she left and went on her own, she was out in the wilderness by herself, probably feeling hopeless and feeling, you know, not having any power available in her own life, feeling abandoned, invisible. You ever felt that way? Like, I can't do anything. Nobody even knows I exist. Feeling that way, that in that moment that God appeared to her and she called him El Roi, which means the God of sight or the one that sees me. So in her place of feeling alone and abandoned and destitute, that God revealed himself in that hardship and that suffering in her world as, if nobody else sees you, Hagar, I see you. If nobody else is aware of you, I'm aware of you. In Genesis 22:14, whenever God had spoken to Abraham, and by the way, I'm pretty aware that these are Hebrew words and I'm killing the pronunciation of them, just so you know that. Abraham was told by God to offer up his son Isaac. And so they're on the way to offer him up. And Isaac says, there's a fire and there's wood. Where's the sacrifice? And Abraham said, the Lord himself will provide a sacrifice. And they go to the mountain that is supposed to take place at. And whenever Abraham raises his hand, the angel of God calls and says, hey, don't do this. Don't sacrifice your son. You've revealed that you'll not withhold anything from God. And then they saw a ram in the thicket. And So Abraham said, well, God has provided a sacrifice. And so he called that Jehovah, and we say Jehovah Jireh. That's not close to pronunciation. But Jehovah Jireh meaning the Lord will provide. He called that place that, or Yahweh Jireh. And so it's the place that he provides. But again, Abraham in a hard place, God revealed that. He'd heard before that God will provide, and he experienced it in one way with the birth of his son, but he experienced it in another way with this sacrifice that took place. I'm sure that Hagar had heard that God sees you. And she'd heard that, but she went beyond hearing it to now she knows it. She sees it. She experienced it personally. Exodus 15:26, whenever they were in the wilderness, and the water there in the wilderness was bitter. And they began to complain, like, man, we need something to drink. And they threw this piece of wood into the water, which was symbolic of the cross. As the water was healed and became drinkable. That at that point, then God began to make a promise to him and said they'd walk in his statutes, that he would be the Lord that heals them. He was Jehovah Rapha. So every one of these times that we look at as people are going through hardship and a hard place, that God reveals himself to them or part of who he is. One of the things that happens when we go in hardship is that we often lean into God in hard times. Can I just be real honest with you? Sometimes my prayer life increases when I'm going through a hard season. Anybody else besides me? Now, can I tell you, this is really a prayer that I prayed before. Sometimes I'm like, Lord, I want to grow. I really want to learn more about you and that kind of thing. And if I could do that without going through a hard place and suffering, I would really prefer that. I've seriously prayed that prayer. Anybody besides me ever prayed that prayer right there? How many of you that are going to start praying that prayer now? You're going to start praying that prayer like, yeah, okay. How many of you here are lying because you're not raising your hand then? You just want to suffer all you can. Okay, anyway, so, but yeah, so it's one of those things that we just lean into him in hard times. You know, here's what else happens is that we learn to trust him in those hard places. That's why we experience the reality of God's presence. Here's a verse you should write down, Deuteronomy 29, 29. In the King James Version, it says this way, the secret things, everybody say secret things. The secret things belong unto the Lord our God. But those things which are revealed belong unto us and to our children forever, that we may do all the words of this law. You know, the truth of the matter is that sometimes we don't know why we're going through things. Sometimes they're a secret. They're not a secret to God. And in my youth and my first start out ministry, anytime anybody would ask me a question, I would try to find this great theological answer and just, well, you know, I think it's because of this. And then I'd get back in my car and the thought come to my mind like, are you sure? No. It's okay if you say, I don't know. I know the reason why some things happen in my life. Sometimes they happen because they're self-inflicted. In other words, sometimes I do it to myself. Anybody here ever self-inflict yourself? If you don't have your hand up, you're self-inflicting yourself right now, okay? Anyway. Yeah, man. It's like, why did this happen? Well, because I was dumb. Or I was selfish, or I got angry, you know? So I self-inflicted this. You know, sometimes it's not me that's self-inflicted. It's sometimes the people that I'm with do dumb things. And they need a good dose of I told you so. Yeah. Well, I remember in Acts, the Apostle Paul was, they were going to put him on a ship, and he said, I don't think we're supposed to go. He said, I fear if we go that we're going to run into bad weather, and it could be a loss of life and a loss of cargo, and they didn't listen to him. And sure enough, they went, and for this, they hit a storm that for weeks they couldn't tell when it was day and when it was night. It was so, they were working so hard to for their lives to be spared, they didn't eat or sleep. And at some point, Paul finally said, hey, if you guys would have just listened to me, we wouldn't be in this place right now. And so sometimes, man, we get in the place that we're in because of the people that we're connected to. And so sometimes those are the things that carry us. And with that, you know, sometimes things happen just because we have a devil in the world. And there's a war going on. And it says that he goes about as a roaring lion seeking whom he may devour. Other times it's just the things of life. Sometimes it's just the cycle of life. When my dad passed away in 2005, it was the closest that I'd ever had anybody that close to me pass away. And I'd never experienced grief like that before. He was in his 70s. And people would say, well, you know, he lived a full life and that type of thing. When my mom had Alzheimer's and she passed, she was in her 80s. And there were days that she didn't know who I was, but there was never a day I didn't know who she was. And it's just because of sin, it's just the cycle. It's just the cycle of life that takes place here because of the fall in the garden that should the Lord tarry and not come in our lifetime, all of us will experience that. And there'll be somebody that's hurt no matter how expected the moment is because our physical presence will no longer be in their life. It's just a part of what took place when sin entered the world. So we have all of these things that happen, and as a result of that, you know, we experience, you know, pain and suffering in our life. But one thing about it is that if we'll lean into God, there'll be things about himself that he'll reveal in that season that we probably would not be able to know him in any other way. That he reveals who he is as the God that sees me when I feel unseen. The God that provides for me when I feel overwhelmed by my needs. The God that heals me when I'm going through a hard place. The God that's overpowering when I feel like my circumstances are bigger than any resource that I have. He's that God. Well, I can hear about him, but when I go through those seasons and he shows up, I've no longer just heard about him. Now I know him. Now I've experienced it personally as to who he is. And so one thing about suffering is we all experience it. It's a great equalizer. It's the one common factor all of us have, but also we experience the reality of God's presence. Things don't always go my way. You know, and the truth of the matter is that sometimes I won't know why. Why did this happen? Sometimes I'm like, I don't know. Not just for your life, but for mine too. Sometimes for me, I have to remind myself, Deuteronomy 29:29 says this, the secret things belong to the Lord. Sometimes he doesn't tell me why everything happened that happened. Sometimes I don't know. What do you do in that moment, Pastor Rick? I'm supposed to trust him. I may not know it, but I know him. And so in those moments, I get a chance to trust him in a way that I couldn't otherwise. And so in all of that, there's just something that God does in us in these things. You know, I remember several years ago, before my son Daniel got married, that he was dating a young lady, and she was a believer. And her grandfather, who was just this strong guy, took care of his family, loved his wife, and his family loved him, just kind of overnight got sick. And it was a really aggressive cancer, and they weren't giving him even a month to live. It just kind of just bunk and was on him. And so I remember that we were in the hospital, and he'd never given his life to Jesus. And the truth matters, he lost his father at a young age. And there were some people that, and I'm sure they meant well, but just some things they said in regards to his father's passing created great pain in his life. And again, you know, when people are hurting, they don't need to know everything you know. Just weep with them. Because things that people said to him at that time, you know, made him wonder where his father, where his dad is. And the truth of the matter is none of us knows what takes place in the last few moments of somebody's life. But this guy, as a result, he hadn't given his life to Jesus. And I remember we were in that room, and his granddaughter, she loved him and he loved her. And finally I said to him, I said, I understand why you've made that decision not to give your life to Jesus. And I said, but you've lived with the grief of where is your father your whole life since you were a kid, not knowing, you know, if he is in heaven or not. And I said, you've kind of made that decision honoring your father, but I said, you're putting your granddaughter in the same place that you were put in. I said, it's clear to me you love your family, right? You love them. He goes, I do. I said, they love you. I said, why wouldn't you want to give your life to Jesus, not just so you're certain, but so they're certain? One of the great gifts we give our family is if they know where we are when we pass. It's one of the greatest elements of peace we can leave them with. Hey, the Bible doesn't say we won't grieve. It says that you'll grieve, but not like people that have no hope. Well, what's that hope? They put their hope in Jesus, we'll see each other again. So I said, you don't want to leave her with the same questions now for the rest of her life, do you? He goes, no. I said, well, let's pray. Do you want to ask Jesus in your heart? He goes, yes. So in that hospital room, like a week before he passed, we prayed the prayer. He gave his life to Jesus. His granddaughter got up in bed with him and just told him she loved him. Forever, it'll be one of the most precious moments or memories I have in ministry. But it was one of those things that because somebody in their suffering, some well-meaning person stood around and instead of just weeping with them, tried to give them some answer that was like, you don't know. You don't know. And even if you do know, is this the moment to say that? What does that do in this moment? What does that change? Just weep. Just weep. Let them see the compassion of God through you. And so number two is this, is that we experience the reality of God's presence. Let's look at this last one here. We just finished verse 5. Let's look at verse 7. It said, after the Lord had finished speaking to Job, he said to Eliphaz the Temanite, I'm angry with you and your two friends. Now, these were the friends that came up to Job and were trying to talk to him while he was in suffering. Let me just say this. When you've got a friend that's hurting, don't be one of Job's friends. Don't get up, you know. And even his wife said, why don't you just curse God and die? I mean, you don't want to be that spouse, you know. Hey, this is really hard for all of us. Why don't you just curse God? I mean, so you want friends around you that will encourage you in the things of God. Well, these friends didn't do that. And he said, I'm angry with you and your two friends, for you have not spoken accurately about me, as my servant Job has. So take 7 bulls and 7 rams and go to my servant Job and offer a burnt offering for yourselves. My servant Job will pray for you. So I think it's wild, first of all, that they were critical of Job, and yet when they needed to be restored, that God sent them back to Job. Hey, this guy you've been critical of, I'm going to make you go to him and offer your sacrifices there, and then he's going to pray for you. I mean, you talk about God just kind of restoring your reputation among people that think God has written you off. What a way to do that. And so he said, my servant Job will pray for you, and I will accept his prayer on your behalf. I will not treat you as you deserve. I'm grateful for that. For you have not spoken accurately about me as my servant Job has. So Eliphaz the Temanite, Bildad the Shuhite, and Zophar the Naamathite did as the Lord commanded them, and the Lord accepted Job's prayer. When Job prayed for his friends, listen to this. When Job prayed for his friends, the Lord restored his fortunes. In fact, the Lord gave him twice as much as before. So in that not only did God continue to use Job, but Job continued to, he got to a place where he began to let God use him again. One of the things that happens when we're going through a hard place is we totally withdraw ourselves and we quit letting God use us to minister into the lives of other people. And, you know, and I understand there's a healing that takes place. There's things that have to be done. But the call on our life doesn't change just because things aren't going our way in this moment. Just because I'm in a hard place doesn't mean that God's through with me. And sometimes in our hardship, we totally withdraw and miss out on what God's going to have us do. I love what Josh Bold said at Awaken. He said this. He said that being wounded is no excuse, no reason to withdraw. That sometimes when we get wounded, we withdraw from the plan of God, from the call of God upon our life. Well, Job, in this, God's like, I know you're hurting, but I'm not done with you. I want you to pray for your friends. And then when he prayed for his friends, when he got reengaged and quit looking at just his life, only at his suffering, only at the hard things he was going through, but realized, yes, I'm going through a hard place, but people still need me. That he engaged in what God had called him to do, and he began to pray for his friends. And when he prayed for his friends, his suffering changed and God restored and gave him twice as much as he had lost. And so we have to understand that in reality of that. So here's the thing we have to know is that we have to realize the beauty of suffering is it's not the end of our story. And what you're going through right now, I'm not trying to diminish it. And I know this, not all suffering is equal. I mean, you know, sometimes things are paper cuts and other times they're complete amputations. And there's a difference. They're both cuts, but I'll take a paper cut over the other any day. But the truth of the matter is that wherever you are, whatever's going on in your life, your story's not over. It's still being written by the grace of God and by the goodness of God. And we want to engage with that. And sometimes, you know, and it's okay to say, God, why is this happening? But there's another prayer we should pray with it as well, and that is, what is it you want to do in me during this season? How can I be used during this season? And as we do that, and want to say, you know, why is this happening? To know that sometimes he may tell us, and sometimes we may live and die and never know, and that's okay. Why? Because we're taught to trust him in the seasons that we don't understand, but we understand him, and we trust him in what we go through. And so to know that your story's not over, and we realize that suffering is not the end of your story. It's not the end. It's not the only part. That becomes our identity sometimes. We just hang on to it. And I can't tell you how many times I've seen ministries birthed out of suffering. I've seen ministries birthed out of loss, out of hard places. I love Pastor Aaron and Jeanette. One of Pastor Aaron's stories that I love so much is that he willingly tells you how trapped in addiction he was, how caught, how enslaved in addiction he was. It cost him almost everything that he had. And yet when he encountered Jesus and he gave his life to him, that this thing that was so much a part of his suffering and pain, that today he overtook a ministry and he probably oversees the largest recovery ministry in the state of Oklahoma. And so This ministry was birthed out of suffering in his own life in a season that at the time he had no idea was when it was going to come to an end. And actually part of it was even birthed in things that took place in him as a child, that took place in his life. And so we have to understand that all of us, part of our story for every one of us is suffering. And there are times in those seasons that God reveals to us who he is that we wouldn't experience otherwise. But often that suffering is something that God uses. It becomes a trophy of his grace and his goodness. And we now know how to go and rescue people from that same place of darkness and brokenness and pain that we were once in ourselves and say, let me show you the way out. And it's what God does in our lives as a result of that. And so we see that with Job. God said, he's going to pray for you now. The one that you thought I was through with, I'm not through with him. He's going to pray with you, and I'm going to hear his prayers in your life, and his life is going to change because not only have I not given up on him, he hasn't given up on me. And so as we do that, then we see God make this change in their story, and it's something that God does in our life as a result of it. We can get so inward focused when we're in pain. We can get so inward focused, and yet even in our hardest places, God doesn't want us to be indifferent to the people that are around us. And he still calls us and uses us that way.